This is a State of Opportunity documentary from Michigan Radio. In 2012, the small town of Muskegon Heights made history. In order to save the local school district, all of its operations were turned over to a for-profit charter school company.
And even though the company turned around test scores and won over many parents, by this year, the district was once again in financial trouble.
Mosaic will be lucky if they even break even on this. They probably will lose money on it.
It's not a very good business model, is it?
This spring, the company was out, and the school district's future was once again in question.
Kids in this community deserve the same opportunity that every other kid got.
I'm Dustin Dwyer.
And I'm Lindsay Smith. This hour, we bring you the story of how Muskegon Heights Schools was saved for the second time, and what the events in this small town over the past few years mean for the rest of us.
When we talk about Muskegon Heights, we're talking about America.
This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Lindsay Smith.
And I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, we are going to bring you the story of how one community school district in a small town near the edge of Lake Michigan nearly died. Twice. And what it took to save that school district. Twice. And what lessons we might take for the many other schools and school districts in Michigan that are struggling for survival.
So let's see, where are we going?
Patrice Johnson sits at the wheel of a clean black Honda Accord on a rainy day in Muskegon Heights. This city, which most people here just call the Heights, it's a small community. It covers only 3 square miles with fewer than 11,000 residents. But it has some big city problems. Poverty, abandoned houses, crumbling streets. And the Heights has one of the highest rates of violent crime in Michigan. This year, 2 students from the district were killed in the streets. Johnson grew up here. She serves on the city council. But in her day job, she's the parent liaison for the Muskegon Heights High School Academy. And today, she's going out on home visits.
The parents I'm visiting right now are parents who have not completed a re-enrollment form, and all of my other methods have failed.
These re-enrollment forms are critical because in Michigan, enrollment determines funding. The more kids you enroll, the more money you get. So the only way to plan for next year financially is to have some idea how many kids are returning.
At the time of this car ride, the future of Muskegon Heights schools was still very much up in the air. And this was the second time the district had been in that situation. 2 years ago, in 2012, Muskegon Heights made history by becoming the first school district in Michigan to convert entirely to a charter district and turn the operation of its schools over to a for-profit company. There are lots of companies now that are in the business of running schools, but never before had a company taken responsibility for an entire district.
After the first year, Johnson says it was tough to find parents who were willing to sign a re-enrollment form.
It was like last year, the whole world was all eyes on you. And every bad thing was made 10 times worse by rumor, media, whatever. And so because of that, you had a lot of kids and parents that were like, we're not coming back. We heard this, we heard that. So that was tough because it was like, my numbers were crap. Like, dude.
This year, things got better. Student test scores went up. Enrollment was down, but attendance for the kids who were enrolled got better.
The problem was money. This April, the state had to front Muskegon Heights schools money to cover payroll twice. A couple weeks later, less than 2 years into its 5-year contract, the district announced it would end its contract with its management company, Mosaica Education. One of the questions hanging over the district in June was whether it would survive at all. At one time, the idea that a school district could completely close up shop would have seemed preposterous. But last year, it happened in Buena Vista Township near Saginaw and in Inkster near Detroit.
In Muskegon Heights, there were no plans for a shutdown. But that didn't stop the rumors.
Hi.
Johnson and I step into a neat living room with 2 boys sitting on the floor watching a movie. The woman reaches for her glasses and starts filling out the re-enrollment form. So, she tells me her name is Helen Mullins.
Your son is, what's your son's name?
John Mullins.
John Mullins, and he's coming back next year.
Yes.
Was it ever a question?
Yes.
What was your concern?
Well, there was talks of the Heights closing. They were saying they didn't have enough money to pay the teachers. So we were thinking, well, if Hike's closed, maybe we should send him downtown. Therefore, we would know, you know, where he would be going the whole year. But I was told that they solved that problem. So we want him to go to Hike's. You know?
Well, you just want certainty.
Right? Yes, I just, you know.
What was it that put your mind at ease on that?
This might be what you know, kind of put my mind at ease.
What you mean, like the knock on the door just now?
Uh-huh,
or?
Yeah.
So just now you made the decision?
Just now. Well, no, my decision all the time was he was going to go to Hike's, but when you knocked on the door, it kind of put the nail in the coffin.
It said, okay, this is for real.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they're not going to have any problems, and it'll be okay to send them to Hike's.
When Mullen signed this paper, actually,
so
the plan that would determine the future of schools in the Heights had not been settled. But eventually, it did get settled. Muskegon Heights schools will not be closing.
This hour, we are going to bring you the story of how that happened.
But before we get to what happened this summer, we have to go back to the story of how Muskegon Heights schools got here. Lindsay has been closely following this story for our newsroom for the past 2 years. And she takes us back now to when all these problems came to a head.
We're going back to 2011, when Muskegon Heights was a regular public school district, but its budget was a mess. At that time, it was facing many of the same budget problems that public school districts across the state faced. It was losing students year after year, so it was getting less money from the state. The cost of health care and pensions was rising. The school board couldn't seem to cut costs fast enough. In 2006, the school district began spending more money than it brought in. They spent down the money in the savings account. Then they borrowed some money. And then they borrowed some more. By 2011,
The school district owes about $3 million to vendors.
This is Dave Sipka.
The district is not able to make some of their bond payments.
Sipka is the superintendent of the Muskegon Area Intermediate School District. Almost every Michigan county's got one. They help individual districts in their counties with special services. But back in December 2011, Sipka took on an unusually big role in Muskegon Heights.
The school board has determined that they're going to eliminate the superintendent's position. I've shared with them they really can't do that.
I just want to be clear, they can't afford to do the superintendent search or can't afford a superintendent.
They can't afford a superintendent.
That meant Sipka had to step in as acting superintendent for Muskegon Heights Schools. And the school board did something else that showed just how bad their budget was. They asked the state of Michigan for an emergency manager. They had tried and tried to fix the budget, but nothing worked. Unlike other school districts and cities facing financial crisis in Michigan, Muskegon Heights School Board didn't fight it. They knew they couldn't make payroll that next month. They threw in the towel. So in December of 2011, they asked for a state takeover. That was a first. Susan Strobel was a teacher in the high school at the time. She remembers teachers couldn't keep the talk of budget chaos from students in the classroom.
You know, they would constantly ask me, are we going to be in school next week? Or, you know, when's the school going to close? And I said, hey, kids, I know just as much as you do. No one tells me anything. I'm not privy to anything that you don't know.
A few months later, the board got its wish. An emergency manager was appointed to run Muskegon Heights Public Schools. The district's finances were so bad, the new manager realized he couldn't afford to open school that fall. So he did the only thing he thought he could do. He laid off all the employees. Then he created an entirely new school district in place of the one he just took over, a charter school district. That was another first. Now, this does get a little complicated, but bear with me a minute. Because the newly created charter school district had no debt, it could afford to open schools. Then emergency manager Don Weatherspoon figured the charter school could offer students a better learning environment, one where school leaders wouldn't be tied down by all the legacy debt of the original Muskegon Heights School District.
Kids are not going to suffer. They're going to have, I think, new opportunities.
Now, there are plenty of charter schools in Michigan, but this was the first time a regular school district was replaced by a charter district. Weatherspoon hired a private, for-profit management company to run the entire district, top to bottom. A month or so later, the emergency manager of Highland Park Public Schools did the exact same thing. The good news for the community was students would still get to go to the same schools in their hometown that fall.
They wanted a neighborhood school. They're getting it. This is now back in the hands of the community. The success or failure of this depends on enrollment, student achievement, and community participation.
That summer, 2 years ago, when Mosaica Education Incorporated signed a 5-year contract to run Muskegon Heights Schools, the community was really excited. Even folks like Angela Ogden, a local union leader and one of the Muskegon Heights teachers who got laid off, she had a good first impression of the for-profit charter company.
Sounds as though they're very much committed to the academics and having a strong curriculum. So far it sounds good.
Ogden compared the school district's budget mess to a prolonged death or a nasty divorce.
Denial to anxiety and stress and sadness. And you know, you're up, you're down, you're everywhere. And so to have something like this, it provides a sense of hope and excitement for everyone.
The excitement lasted for a while, but many students became frustrated with a bunch of problems in the new district. Teacher turnover was high, and some of them weren't properly certified by the state. There were problems with the special education program, and the old, neglected school buildings needed a lot more money to meet safety codes than expected. Ultimately, a flood of students left Muskegon Heights. In 2 years, the district lost almost half its student population. Taken together, all of these problems created a bad situation for the new charter district that, keep in mind, was created to resolve the budget problems of the old school district the state took over. Things came to a head this school year when the school district couldn't afford to pay the management company anymore. Not only that, Mosaica CEO Mike Connolly says the school district had to borrow money from the for-profit company to pay staff.
Do you know how much that amounts to? Like, how much do they owe you?
I think they owe us, well, I know they owe us a little over $2 million.
Is it unusual that Mosaica works for free? I mean, sort of the gut in me says, you know, why are you guys doing this?
It's not a very good business model, is it?
In March, Mosaica would not front any more money to cover payroll. And by April, Mosaica and Muskegon Heights agreed to part ways, throwing students, parents, and staff back into the same uncertainty they faced when the charter system was set up 2 years ago.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, Muskegon Heights was not alone. The vast majority of Michigan's charter schools are operated by large for-profit companies. What happened to the grassroots, locally operated charters?
They were getting crushed by the regulations.
How Michigan got the charter school law no one intended. That's in about 10 minutes on State of Opportunity.
This is a State of Opportunity documentary from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer.
And I'm Lindsay Smith. This hour, we are bringing you the story of a community school district struggling for survival. The community is Muskegon Heights, a small town covering only 3 square miles and fewer than 11,000 residents. Based on average family income, the Heights is also one of the poorest cities in Michigan, and it has one of the highest rates of violent crime. But when you spend time in the community, you find something else.
So I was in the Heights on a sunny Saturday, and I met a woman named Kimberly Sims. She told me she hears the kinds of stories that usually get out about the Heights. She doesn't care for those stories.
What are people getting wrong about the Heights?
Oh my God, what they're getting wrong about the Heights is that we're a community of people who don't care.
Sims was standing in a navy blue t-shirt stained with sweat and holding a rake. We were on the lawn of an empty school building, one of 4 in the small city. Sims serves on the Muskegon Heights City Council, and she was here sweating along with her fellow council members, raking away the leaves and trash that have built up since the building was abandoned a few years ago. This and 3 other empty school buildings in the Heights are now under the control of the state land bank.
To just see how they have been treated in this whole process is frustrating, because now not only do we have the housing blight, but now we have big buildings like this sitting that are being blighted and they're not being tended to.
But where others might come in and see problems with abandoned, overgrown, or crumbling property, Sims sees opportunity.
I get a lot of people, and I say it all the time, that think people live in Muskegon Heights only because they can't live anywhere else. And that's not true. People live in Muskegon Heights because they choose to be here. A lot of people do. Like, I choose to live here. You know what I mean? I've been here all my life. We could certainly go to other areas, but we want to stay here.
Sim says she stays because there's a sense of community in Muskegon Heights. It's not in the blighted houses. It's in the well-maintained houses that sit right next door. It's in the city council that gets together to rake leaves on a Saturday. And it's in the schools. The mascot for the Muskegon Heights High School is the tiger. Something people talk about a lot in this city is tiger pride. Sims worries about losing that.
Many of the kids who are tigers, their parents have been tigers, their grandparents have been tigers. Good gracious, their great-grandparents have been tigers. That legacy breeds deeper than just you were a student of Muskegon Heights Public Schools. That's like community. You know what I mean? So to just eradicate that and there are no more tigers, that would be a devastation.
And Sims said she was worried not just about the school's closing, but about the constant feeling of chaos and upheaval surrounding the district.
Kids in this community deserve the same opportunity that every other kid got. And so to keep getting pawned off and passed from, that's hard for me. So, I mean, at the end of the day, how do we make it work for the kids that are here?
This question, how do we make schools work in communities where so much else has been lost? It's really the question for a lot of cities and neighborhoods, not just Muskegon Heights. But people in this community at least hoped they'd found an answer 2 years ago. It was an innovative idea, the first of its kind. The entire public school district for the city converted to a charter, and its operations were turned over to a management company. You're listening to a State of Opportunity documentary on Michigan Radio. I'm Lindsay Smith.
And I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, we're bringing you the story of how one community saved its local school district twice, and what lessons we might take for other communities where school districts are struggling to stay open. We've reached a point in our story where we're going to back away from the specific events in Muskegon Heights for a bit here and talk about one statewide trend that's played a significant role in those events. For the past 2 years, Muskegon Heights Schools was run by a for-profit charter school management company.
How private companies run public charter schools has been in the news a lot lately. You might have read the Detroit Free Press investigation of charter schools and their management companies, which came out earlier this month. That investigation brought to many people's attention that these management companies don't have to disclose their finances to their charter school boards or anybody else. The paper found numerous examples where that lack of disclosure and oversight led to some shady deals.
A little over a year ago, I sat down with Gary Miron, a researcher at Western Michigan University, to talk about Michigan's charter school landscape. Miron studies charter schools, and he's gotten a reputation as a critic of Michigan's current charter school laws. But he told me he's not opposed to charter schools.
I always say that I'm a charter school believer. I believe in the charter school ideal. Unfortunately, we've gotten so far away from it today. And what we have today and what we're calling charter schools, we should really be calling franchise schools or corporate schools. And I kind of resent the fact that some people are still referring to these massive national networks of charter schools as charter schools because they go against the original idea.
Miron says that original idea was to have small, locally controlled, locally operated schools that would be free to pursue new ways of educating kids. But that didn't happen in Michigan. Today, Michigan has more public charter schools being operated by for-profit companies than any other state in the country, by a lot. Miron published a study last year which found that for-profit companies run 79% of Michigan's charters. That's twice the share of the next closest state.
Which begs the question, if Michigan's charter school policy was meant to empower parents and local communities, how did our system become dominated by large management companies, many of them based out of state?
If you read the Detroit Free Press investigation, one of the answers given is that Michigan has an especially permissive charter school law. At least a half dozen states ban for-profit charter management altogether. In Michigan, the argument goes, there is lax oversight, and educational companies have swooped in to take advantage.
But it turns out that isn't the only way to explain the rise of for-profit education management companies in Michigan. The other explanation, confusingly enough, is the opposite. For-profits dominate in Michigan not because of lax regulation, but because of excessive regulation. Gary Miron says one example is what it takes to get approved to start a charter school in the state.
The charter school law here in Michigan and other states refers to charter schools being small, locally run, autonomous schools. Well, there's not that many local groups that have the wherewithal and the time to put together a 350-page charter application with an elaborate curriculum and everything. Now, these for-profit groups come along, and when you go in and look at their actual charter proposals, they're identical from one school to one school. All they do is change the name and the address of the site, and they can submit these things in mass, and they have become the vehicle for growth.
It's worth noting that when Michigan's charter school law went into place just over 20 years ago, no one intended for this to be the outcome.
That was the tricky part, and it's still the tricky part to this day.
Mary Kay Shields knows the history of Michigan's charter school policy as well as anyone because she was there when it was written. And when the law passed in 1993, she was appointed by then-Governor John Engler to oversee the law's implementation. And it didn't go easy. There was a big fight, a state Supreme Court challenge. When the dust settled, what we ended up with was kind of like Frankenstein's monster, a cobbled-together set of pieces and parts. It was enough to bring charter schools to life, but no one was totally happy with how it turned out.
It didn't look like the original concept, and it ended up we are the only state that I'm aware of that has to still do everything a traditional district has to do.
Well, almost everything. Charters don't have to have local collective bargaining agreements with teachers' unions. They don't pay into the state teacher pension fund. Plus, they're free from teacher tenure laws, which, taken together, explain a lot of the controversy and political fighting that have happened around charter schools. And it helps explain why the emergency manager for Muskegon Heights Schools decided to convert the district to a charter school system to save money.
But Shields says the burden of all the other regulations, the reporting requirements, the testing requirements, and just that endless stack of paperwork that any school administrator will tell you they hate, it all makes it very difficult for local grassroots control of a charter school.
Think about it. The original vision of a charter school is to have an impassioned school leader or an impassioned community leader or an impassioned teacher has this vision that I want to teach kids differently. They were getting crushed by the regulations, just crushed, because they had no idea all the things that took place in the back room of a traditional school district, administration. They had no idea how to handle it. So the way the legislation is structured, you would be almost crazy to try to attempt to open a school without help. And that's where the management companies started and flourished in Michigan.
The other thing that makes it hard, if not impossible, for a small operation to open a charter school is startup costs. Say you wanted to open up a charter school this fall. First, you've got to buy or rent a building. Then you need to hire and pay your charter school staff. While the state of Michigan does provide most of the money to run schools, traditional or charter, that first check, it doesn't arrive until October. So you'd either need to have a bunch of money or know someone who's willing to loan you a bunch of money.
A management company can help a lot with that stuff. But I asked Shields, why did it have to be for-profit companies that took on this task rather than nonprofits?
Why does that make a difference? I think that's a phony debate.
She told me if the concern is that leaders will take excessive salaries out of the public money provided to operate a school, that's not a problem you find exclusively at for-profit companies. Nonprofits can have that problem too. And if the concern is corruption or shady deal-making, that can happen at any school, traditional public, private, or charter. Sure, there are differences in what type of information privately held companies have to disclose versus what a nonprofit is required to disclose. But Shields says the structure of the organization shouldn't be what matters. What should matter are results.
And some of our very best charter schools are managed by companies that are for-profit and have a model. I don't have a problem with that.
Last year, Bridge Magazine did an analysis of how Michigan's charter schools managed by for-profits measured up to those run by nonprofits. Bridge concluded that the for-profits performed the same or better than their peers in the nonprofit sector. But there was also wide variation, with many for-profit charters ranked near the top in school performance statewide, and many others clumped at the bottom.
You You are listening to a State of Opportunity documentary from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer.
And I'm Lindsay Smith. This hour, we're here to tell the story of how the community of Muskegon Heights has managed to keep its local school district alive. And right now, we're digging a little deeper into the idea Heights school leaders started pursuing 2 years ago. The idea of having a private, for-profit company manage a public charter school.
One of the fears of allowing private, for-profit companies to operate schools is that company executives will get rich while kids' education suffers. And this is one of the big distinctions of a privately held for-profit company. If it's private, it doesn't have to disclose executive compensation to anyone. But when you look at what's happened in Muskegon Heights, it seems just as important to ask whether some of these companies can even be viable if they depend on profits to sustain themselves.
When Mosaica Education agreed to run the Muskegon Heights schools 2 years ago, one thing many people were hoping for was stability. But just 2 years later, Mosaica is gone. The reason the company left had nothing to do with academic achievement. Test scores had actually gone up under Mosaica's management. Most parents we've talked to were happy with the changes the company made. But it just wasn't financially sustainable. That's the reason Mosaica left.
Mosaica will be lucky if they even break even on this. They probably will lose money on it.
Jim Gunner heads the National Charter Schools Institute. He serves as a kind of consultant for charter school boards. Muskegon Heights is one of the places where he's worked, which gives him some knowledge of what happened with Mosaica.
And I haven't seen their finances, but they have invested a tremendous amount of time and energy and money up front to try and make this work. And this was to be a 5-year deal. If they were ever to make money, it would have been on the back end.
Gunner doesn't know if they made a profit. Neither do we. Mosaica's finances are private. What we do know is that in order to even finish this school year, the state had to bail out Muskegon Heights schools again. The state gave the school district another emergency loan, this one worth roughly $1.5 million, to keep its charter school system open through June. So far, state taxpayers have loaned Muskegon Heights schools more than $12 million to stay afloat. And we know that Mosaica, the company, fronted the district $2 million of its own money to operate the district. But the only reason we know that is the company's CEO volunteered the information in an interview with Michigan Radio.
By law, these school management companies are treated like contractors. It's just that their contract often is to basically do everything. Hiring teachers, hiring bus companies, developing curriculum, everything a school does. I asked Gunner why management companies shouldn't at least disclose the pay of their top executives, the way that a nonprofit organization does, so that taxpayers could know if someone takes advantage of the system.
Okay, so let me give you an analogy. If the school buys computers from Dell, do they get to know what Michael Dell makes? No.
Wait, Dell is a publicly traded company. We do find out what Michael Dell makes.
Okay, fair enough. So if the school contracts with K-12 Education, which is publicly traded, you'd be able to see that
information. Yeah, but Mosaica is not National Heritage. Those are privately held corporations.
Correct.
So we don't find out what their executives make.
You don't.
Should we?
You know, that's a question that people would like to know what other people make. But is that really pertinent to how that school's spending its money and the results it's getting? I would say no. I would say that we need to be staunch on performance and if the companies are performing. And that's really the goal of this ultimately, is that authorizer has a performance contract with a charter board. The charter board has a performance contract with its management. And if they're performed to those terms of agreements, then they're paying for those services. If they're not, the way to hold them accountable is either to apply sanctions or to actually terminate the agreements.
Gunner says he's been involved in closing charters because of academic performance. But that's not the only reason a charter school might close. Out of 84 charter schools that have shut their doors since Michigan's charter law went into effect, 20 shut down at least in part because of financial viability.
The issue of whether charter school management companies should be required to disclose certain financial information isn't just about putting a check on executive pay. It's about being able to know in advance whether a company that's agreed to carry out the task of educating kids actually has the financial viability to carry out the task. The current discussion around charter schools in Michigan includes plenty of debate about whether these companies should be allowed to reap profits from our education system. But Muskegon Heights shows that in our current system, not reaping profits can create problems too.
One day this spring, Patrice Johnson checked her bank account balance, and a paycheck that was supposed to be there wasn't.
It wasn't like you woke up in the morning and, you know, you were forewarned that you won't get paid on this day. There was no forewarning.
That missed paycheck was the first sign to Johnson that things might not work out with Mosaica Education as her district's management company. Less than a month later, the district and Mosaica announced they would part ways. The business case for staying in the Heights just wasn't there. In the end, Mosaica did just what the leaders of the last district did, threw up their hands and walked away.
Well, I think when you can just walk away, the morale of it all is low. When a student's mind, a parent's mind, an employee's mind, we think you can leave tomorrow. It's like if you're married to someone and I'm putting my trust in you that you're going to provide for me, we're going to be in this situation, but then at any given moment you can walk away. I don't feel too comfortable about that.
Coming up in about 10 minutes, we'll hear the new plan school leaders in Muskegon Heights came up with to keep the district alive. There's one big difference from the old plan.
It means that there's no outside management company that must turn a profit to continue the business of the school.
You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. This is a State of Opportunity documentary from Michigan Radio. I'm Lindsay Smith.
And I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, the story of one community's struggle to save its schools.
How are you?
Very good. How are you? Busy, busy.
Yeah, trying to get everything done if I can. It's feeling like a little bit impossible today.
Monday, June 16th. The day leaders of the Muskegon Heights school system will announce their latest plan to keep the district alive. Alina Zachary Ross sits in her office at a long oval table, as she usually does, surrounded by papers.
It has been 2 years since the district made a historic decision to hire a for-profit company to run its schools. It has been less than 2 months since that company agreed to end its contract with the district because of ongoing budget problems.
In less than 3 hours, Zachary Ross will be at the school board meeting for another historic announcement in the Heights.
How are you feeling?
Good, good. A lot of excitement. I'm just ready to have the board meeting done. Have all of this taken care of. I don't like things up in the air.
Zachary Ross is not from this community. She grew up in Detroit. Her mother was an elementary school teacher there. Zachary Ross was hired to run Muskegon Heights schools by Mosaica Education, the for-profit company that took over management of the city's schools in 2012.
That year, not long after she was hired, Zachary Ross told me she wasn't sure about this whole charter school thing.
I was not very familiar with charters. I had heard the charters, they were stealing other people's children. You know, what about this emergency manager? Did the emergency manager take away the rights of all of these students? It was a conflict in my spirit. But this district is the public school district, the home district. If we were not here, then they would not have a local school district.
Those were her thoughts 2 years ago. Since then, these schools and this community have become Zachary Ross's life. She comes to work early. She leaves late. Her husband even works for the district in an office next to her own. Under Zachary Ross's watch, test scores improved in Muskegon Heights. So did attendance.
So when Mosaica ended its contract with the Muskegon Heights School Board, many people in the community were more worried about losing Zachary Ross than they were about losing the company. But in her office on June 16th, Zachary Ross finally had an answer to the question so many people in the community were asking. Would she stay?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yes. So now I know I'm staying, actually.
Oh.
Yeah.
That'll make a lot of people happy.
Oh, it's really exciting. It's really exciting. Again, I think people will be really surprised about the announcement tonight.
When we talk about Muskegon Heights, it's no exception. We're talking about America.
In downtown Muskegon Heights, across the street from City Hall, there is a museum dedicated to the history of African Americans in the area. It is called the James Jackson Museum of African American History.
My name is James Jackson, and I'm an osteopathic physician. Been here for 53 years, and when we came here, the town was as black as white as you could find in the north. I mean, you have blacks set rooted on certain areas, and they stayed in the areas. The bank determined where you live. They had a line. They wouldn't lend money beyond that line.
That line existed in nearly every city in America in the 1960s. That line kept black people from getting home mortgages, even when they were financially qualified. That line has a lot to do with where we are today and with our struggling schools. We are as racially segregated now as we were then. And the economic opportunities that were denied to blacks, including the opportunity to build up wealth through home ownership, it ensured that the places where mostly black people live would have fewer resources than most of the places where white people live. Today, nearly 80% of the people in Muskegon Heights are black. Almost half the people in the Heights live in poverty. A quarter of households in the city get by on less than $10,000 per year. But James Jackson does not blame white people for that, nor does he expect anyone from outside the Heights to fix the city's problems.
Can a city like the Heights solve its problems on its own?
Yes. I have no problems. Yes.
Absolutely. The resources are here.
No, you have to create the resources. The resources on here. The resources, the way America is going, is nowhere. We don't know how to use resources. We know how to spend them, but we don't know how to use them. There's enough black power around. If it's consolidated, it can have a working goal.
Jackson says to him, this isn't about money. It's about ideas. It's about leadership and about people.
It ain't no one-man Superman deal. This is a people's deal. And see, and you're looking for something where giving the answers lie in you, in me. But we can only bring them out by struggling with each other. And if we can't get to that stage, you lose the battle before you even fight it. This is a beautiful place to really have a struggle and take over. Because people are running away, and you want to run to it.
There are some people in Muskegon Heights who will never give up on their community school district. Not the last time the district was in trouble, not this time.
A lot of those worries that we had 2 years ago, they did diminish over this last year and a half. Now we have the added worry of what's going to happen now, but I still feel confident in Muskegon Heights.
Kaya Thornton graduated from Muskegon Heights High School. Her mother was a teacher in the district. Her aunt was a teacher in the district. Now her son Serenus is a freshman at the Muskegon Heights High School Academy. I met Thornton in a conference room at the high school. I sat down with her and two other parents, Lakeisha and Chris Thomas, who have two kids in the district, one of whom is a freshman at the high school. They told me, unlike last time, they were confident this time that the school district wouldn't close. But they were worried it might change.
My hope is they keep everything in place as is, but just if you just needed to run it administratively different, do that. But keep the head of schools, keep the teachers, keep who you have in place.
Because these kids, you know, they took off these kids to adjust. Now they trust these people.
This is Chris Thomas.
Like some of these kids, they don't have a whole lot at home, and when they come to school, that's their family, that's their safety zone. And if you change that, it's just like taking a kid away from his mother.
Roll call, please.
At 5 p.m. on June 16th, the Muskegon Heights School Board calls to order the meeting that will finally settle the question, What will this school district look like next year?
First, there's all the business of a normal school board meeting. Members of this board are appointed by the school district's emergency manager, but they all live in this community. Almost an hour into the meeting, the school board finally gets to the big item on the agenda. Who's going to run Muskegon Heights schools in the fall? The board's attorney, John Gretzinger, makes the announcement that all the parents and staff here have been waiting for.
Ultimately, it came with the recommendations for essentially three things. Hire Ms. Zachary Ross, hire these ISD to our finances, and hire one of the staffing companies, Advanced Educational Services, to be our support staffing company.
And this was it. No stirring speech, no cheers, no boos. If you weren't paying close attention, you could barely even figure out what it meant.
But here is what it meant. Elena Zachary Ross would be employed by the school district. She would be accountable to the school board, not, as she was before, to a management company. This time, there's still an outside company, but it's little more than an HR firm for the school district. Teachers and staff will work for the company. The third part of the plan would put the Muskegon County Intermediate School District in charge of Muskegon Heights' business office. Bottom line, this new plan is a hybrid approach. The district would have a superintendent accountable to a board and a company that employs the teachers. It's ultimately about two things, restoring some local control and saving money. Dave Sipka, who helped come up with the idea for the hybrid approach as head of the Muskegon County ISD, says it's a lot different than what came 2 years ago.
It means that there's no outside management company that must turn a profit to continue the business of the school. The model truly does mean that the future of Muskegon Heights is firmly in the hands of local people that care about their community.
Depending on how many students show up in the fall, the new approach is expected to cost at least 15% less than it did last school year.
From a much higher level, from a 30,000-foot level, I look at this as potentially a model for what ISDs could do around the state for school districts that have been in financial distress or are headed that way. And I think that's going to be a big picture.
You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer.
And I'm Lindsay Smith. This hour, we're talking about how one community saved its school district from the brink of financial collapse. Michigan has a lot of school districts in financial distress right now. As of June, 45 school districts were operating in a deficit. Five of those districts are being overseen by the state under Michigan's emergency manager law. Last year, two school districts dissolved completely.
Most of the school districts in financial trouble exist in communities that are in trouble. Communities with high poverty, high crime, communities with a legacy of racial discrimination. Communities where the education of children is an especially important priority. And yet, after 20 years of school choice and charter schools, after years of trying to figure out anything that will work to keep these districts afloat, to ensure that they provide a high-quality education, there are still no sure answers.
But leaders in Muskegon Heights and in Lansing believe their new approach, with the cost-saving benefits of a charter school married to the accountability of a board-appointed superintendent, that's as good of an idea as anyone has come up with so far.
Basically, we said we think our plan is better. Now we're going to have to prove it.
The day after the new plan for Muskegon Heights schools is announced, Alina Zachary Ross stands in front of her high school staff, going over the details. She tells them that the new model was chosen over other proposals on the table, including a proposal from the Statewide Educational Achievement Authority, which was created to manage troubled schools. Zachary Ross told her staff she believed Muskegon Heights could do a better job managing itself. No company, no EAA. But this plan would not, on its own, turn the district around. Zachary Ross knows enrollment must stabilize. She knows she needs to keep the teachers that have already begun the turnaround in student achievement.
We've done this because of you. And that's all jokes aside. We can't continue on at the rate that I'd like to see without you. I can get teachers, but I want you. I can get assistants, but I want you, and I need you here, because it's you that is in that formula of success.
This year, that formula will include less money. Zachary Ross says 94% of the students who were enrolled this year in Muskegon Heights schools have committed to returning next year. But next year's budget assumes more kids will be lost, which means as many as 6 teachers will be out of a job. Zachary Ross says she's hopeful if enrollment numbers stabilize, those teacher positions will eventually come back.
Every summer in Muskegon Heights, there's a parade for the Festival in the Park. Nearly 11,000 people live in the Heights, and on the Saturday of the parade, it seems every one of them must either be in the parade or sitting along the route cheering. Muskegon Heights Schools has always been a big part of the parade. Converting to a charter academy didn't change that 2 years ago. Converting to a new hybrid management system didn't change it this year. Newly named superintendent Elena Zachary Ross rode in a Cadillac with her husband near the front of the procession. They were here to sell some good news.
We got kids with banners down there. And our new shirts, the best is yet to come.
The best is yet to come. It's spelled out in black letters over an orange background. Tiger colors. The Muskegon Heights High School mascot is the tiger, and around here they've got what they call Tiger Pride. It's on full display at the parade. I catch up with Carla Turner Laws, the high school principal, getting ready to start the parade. She's a graduate of the school district, and she introduces me to a friend who also graduated from the Heights, Tawanda McDaniel. McDaniel is ecstatic that the district has a new management plan.
I would say I was so happy to see the school surviving, and I'm just glad that Ms. Laws is a part of it. She's done an excellent job. As you can see, our test scores have improved since she's been on board, and I'm just happy because that's one thing I don't want to see, and that's Muskegon Heights closed. Never. I just don't know what this community will do without that school.
But there is a limit to how much Tiger Pride can carry the Muskegon Heights district going forward. Tiger Pride wasn't enough to stop an enrollment slide in 2012, and it's clear that the district's ongoing transition wears on some parents. I caught up with Aaron Johnson and Darrell McBride along the parade route. They have 2 kids, one who goes to the Muskegon Heights system, and another who goes to a privately managed charter school in Muskegon. Johnson and McBride told me they like both schools, but they say the Heights has had some consistency issues.
They keep jumping school to school, they lose paperwork so much, so parents ain't got time for it right now. So they trying to get their kids into school that's going to fit them.
That's responsible.
Yeah, that's responsible for them.
You think they're losing stuff just because they're moving? So much changing all the time.
So much change, yeah. So that's the only reason, I think. Heights a good school, you feel me?
But it's a lot of different teachers. Every year, they have a lot of different, teachers all the time.
If the current budget goes forward, the district could lose another 6 teachers this year. And there's another building consolidation underway. Johnson and McBride say even if they do keep their daughter in the Heights through elementary school, they've already made up their mind to leave when she gets to high school.
Why?
The environment. Crazy environment, man. We gotta be safe. We gotta have our kids safe. Out here in the Heights, it ain't safe right now.
Well, your kids are still young. Is there anything the school district could do to convince you to send your kids, to keep them in the Heights?
No, it ain't nothing they could do. My mind already set up. Not in the Heights.
Nothing. They couldn't get you no matter what.
Nah. My kids can't go to Heights.
For much of the history of our public education system in Michigan, parents actually couldn't make the kind of decision that Johnson and McBride are talking about making with their kids. Parents who wanted to send their kids to another school district had to either get permission from the district where they lived, or they had to move, or they had to lie about their address.
The old system was more stable for school districts, no doubt. The cost of choice in Muskegon Heights has been steep, but it's also forced local leaders to take steps they never would have taken otherwise. Twice now, the school district in Muskegon Heights has made history, but the future is still uncertain.
At the end of the parade route, Elena Zachary Ross walks through the crowd wearing her bright orange shirt that declares, "The best is yet to come." Moving through the crowd is almost like a victory tour for Zachary Ross. One after the other, people keep coming up to congratulate her on her new job and the district's new structure.
I'm so glad about what's happening.
Back to more local control.
Yeah, I'd like to sit down and we'll talk.
Yes, that'd be good.
Sipping on a frozen lemonade, Zachary Ross makes her way to the front of the parade route. The big finale of the parade this year, just like in years past, is the Muskegon Heights High School Marching Band. Their closing number, like in years past, is the school's fight song. The crowd doesn't need to be told to sing along as they join in with the refrain, as defiant as it is optimistic. I'm so glad I'm from Muskegon Heights.
Tamar Charney is executive producer of State of Opportunity. Vincent Duffy is our news director. Sarah Hewlett edited this documentary.
The State of Opportunity team is Sarah Alvarez, Jennifer Guerra, and Lucy Perkins. I'm Dustin Dwyer.
And I'm Lindsay Smith.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.